Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa spent the last year reviewing their programming and mission and their identity. The organization has announced a name change and a programming shift at the Hardesty Arts Center in the Tulsa Arts District. The organization is now known as AHA Tulsa. Now, AHA Tulsa will continue a lot of the important arts education roles that the council did. They'll continue its ongoing Arts in the School program and fold the Harweldon Institute teacher training program into that. They'll continue the Any Given Child Art Immersion program with Tulsa Public Schools K through 8 population. In fact, the Arts and Humanities Council name will continue to live on in its convening roles as support for about 100 arts and cultural organizations, helping small startups secure 501c3 status, providing small arts organizations event and liability insurance, and serving as an overall advocate for the arts. So what's changing besides the name for AHA Tulsa? With the Hardesty Center, the group is now more than ever a presenting organization, and what and how they present at AHA is changing. The second floor of AHA will be given over to The Experience, an immersive, sensory, artist-driven installation. And the third floor will be The Studio, a class, artist workshop, and makerspace open to anyone interested in experiential art making and exploring creativity. Joining me to talk about the changes is the Executive Director of AHA Tulsa, Holly Becker, and Amber Litwack, the Director of Education, Public Engagement, and National Partnerships. They're my guests today on Studio Tulsa. Holly and Amber, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
So what went into the decision to change the name of the Arts and Humanities Council to AHA Tulsa? It also sounds like it was a total review of mission and the things you want to do.
It was, Rich. We took a long look at our identity and how the public interacts with us and wants to engage with us. And we had some challenges. We were originally founded as the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa in 1961. We opened the Hardesty Arts Center in 2012. And when that happened, we coined our own acronym, AHA, to stand for Arts and Humanities Hardesty Arts. So we essentially at that point had three names, and we found that problematic. We had guests who and clients who didn't know who we were and what we did. So we went through a branding effort to figure out, okay, how should we talk about ourselves? How do people want to engage with us? What name resonates with the most people? And it was a long process, but we landed on AHA all the way back to AHA.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that since people didn't really understand who they were dealing with. I think that's been a central challenge for the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa since its inception, because it's been a bit of a lot of different things. It's a person that would have a salon in Harweldon. It would be an event that seemed to support the overall arts, like the old Conchi auction going back to the 70s and 80s. It's had a wide, varied mission that's sort of hard to define, isn't it?
That's true. And it wasn't a problem for us, really, until 2012 when we opened that art center and needed to reach the public directly. So when we were founded in 1961, our original mission was to support the sector as a whole, to support arts and humanities and cultural organizations as a whole, kind of as an association. And we did that for many years. And then our next big initiative was in education. The organization at the time noticed that the arts was leaving our public schools. And in 1965, so a long time ago, we recognized that and started our first educational program. And that continues today. So over 50 years later, we're still filling gaps in the school systems with arts education. And that was all fine and good. For all of that time, we were sort of a backbone organization for education, for artists, for other arts organizations. But when we opened the Arts Center in the Tulsa Arts District, now we reach the public directly. And now
you become a presenter.
That's
really
right. And now we need to have a brand and a name that people understand and that resonates with them.
Now, certainly, AHA itself is sort of a linchpin of the Tulsa Arts District now. But I know that programming has come and gone at the facility over the last few years as you've worked through, you know, the challenges that you've taken since you've had over, because there were financial challenges mm-hmm. for a while. What's the situation with the building and the programming you're going to be doing there?
Right. We're really excited about what we're working on right now, and we will be opening to the public in June. You know, we really took a creative look at our facility, and it was driven from a need to serve more people. We serve about 25,000 people at the Hardesty Center, and that's a lot of people, but we know Tulsa is a market large enough that we could draw more, and we know our facility has more capacity than that. So when our mission is to cultivate creativity and to encourage people to support the arts and to find their own creativity, we need to reach more people to be furthering our mission. So that was the start of it. And the staff and the board took our own advice and took a creative look at how we were using the facility. And we came up with a really cool model that we think will be simpler for guests to understand, for the community to know what you can do there, and then to get them excited to come and participate in it.
So what's the foundation, the strategies? And also, we should mention that, you know, AHA for a while was just one of several other locations where you could see contemporary art. You know, it's 108 Contemporary, it's Philbrook downtown, it's Living Arts. How are you distinguishing AHA from those other facilities?
Right. That's an excellent question, Rich. And that's a key part of this strategy, is to do something that is unique, because we're also still that association of arts organizations. And we want to use our facility that will draw these numbers in. Our goal is to get to 100,000 people. We want to use it to support the sector and not to compete. So we've developed what we believe is a model that is unique enough to help us use that as a jumping off point.
But if you're doing exhibits, aren't you competing on some level anyway?
Well, of course, we're all competing. At some level. Everybody who has a facility or has an event to offer is competing. But we're doing our best to use it as a model to support what other people are doing. We want to drive more attendance into the Hardesty Arts Center and then communicate with those people the importance of creativity, the importance of the arts. We want to encourage them to support arts education, to go buy an opera ticket if they never have before. Right? That's our goal. And so the real differentiator is going to be what happens on the second and the third floor. And I think Amber Litwack, who's here with us today, is maybe best to explain some of that.
Amber Litwack is the Director of Education and Public Engagement and National Partnerships, a long title at AHA Tulsa. So what is going to be happening on the second and third floor? Because I think when most people go to AHA now, they see the exhibits on the first floor. They might go up, and sometimes those exhibits do go up to the second floor. Very rarely do people go up to the third floor, which is really some amazing facilities for creative spaces. So what's going to happen on the second and third floor?
So the second floor is what we are calling the experience. And the experience is an artist-driven, large-scale immersive art exhibition that is meant to allow visitors to explore a fantastical multimedia environment through sight, sound, and touch. So we're really, it will draw you in and engage all of your senses. We really wanted to offer our patrons a new form of visitor engagement that doesn't currently exist in Tulsa, while also sparking imagination and creative thinking through the exploration of a completely new environment.
So it'll be completely immersive.
Correct.
You're going to, how many artists are involved in the creation of this?
We conceptualized this project. Let me start over. We have five lead artists who are spearheading the project, and they each have a zone on the second floor. The zones were determined essentially by the natural architecture of the building. It was really obvious where those spaces should begin and end. And each of our five lead artists is responsible for leading the creative direction of their zone, as well as working with their peers to make sure that things flow into one another in a way that they
should. So they're collaborating as well to create this overall experience.
Correct. Right. Each lead artist additionally has a budget to hire other artists to help them. So for example, if we have one artist who is extremely skilled in film and video, that's really his primary medium, he wanted to have some other sculptural elements, for example. So he had funds to be able to hire someone who had that expertise to help him execute his vision.
So do you anticipate the experience being sort of a must-see if you're coming to Tulsa? Is it going to be that sort of experience?
Absolutely.
Because I'm trying to get my head around what an immersive multimedia art experience is.
Correct.
Because been to several. Some sort of strike me as, St. Louis City Museum has, they've engaged artists to create a children's museum, and it's just wildly imaginative, just craziness. And while it is built as a children's museum, adults go to it as well. In fact, it's open till midnight because adults love to go to this as well. But that's more of an entertainment situation. Do you anticipate this being more of an entertainment medium or more of a visual arts, immersive experience?
Well, honestly, both.
Okay.
Funny that you say that. We were recently at a culture track presentation at Fulbrook Museum, and they were talking about how the cultural sector, consumers in the cultural sector, are looking for experiences that are fun. That was the number one thing that was valued when people were seeking out cultural experiences. And so we don't see anything wrong with presenting an experience that is both fun and entertaining as well as fine art. I mean, I think that the two can coexist without issue.
So this will be unveiled when? In May for a special fundraising event, and then it will open in June, correct?
That's right. May 12th is our annual fundraiser, the Create Gala, and our guests to that event will get to see the experience first. And so they'll get kind of their sneak peek and get to see that. Then the artist will put some final touches on the exhibit between that time and towards the end of June. And during that time, we're going to allow members in. So AHA members can come and see the artist putting their finishing touches on it, maybe get to meet an artist in the process. And then it all opens to the public June 30th.
And will this be a static exhibit, or will it be the experience will be up for maybe 9 months or 12 months, and then you start the process over with new artists? Or what's the plan?
The vision is for it to be up at least 6 months, maybe longer, and then we will change it over and have a new exhibition in the same format. But this is honestly a test for us. We want to see how people respond to it. We know that in developing programming, it's important to see how guests interact. And we don't presume to know. We think everyone's going to love it. We love it already. It's halfway done, and we love walking through it. But we want to see how guests respond to it and use that to determine what we do next.
Now, this seems to be a time of experimentation for a lot of institutions, cultural institutions in the city. You've seen Philbrook doing a year-long, museum confidential, getting behind the scenes of the museum and really creating an exhibit, which I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in any other city I've been to. This sounds like something very different. Are there models you're going on, or are you creating your own sort of model with this particular exhibit?
Well, both. I'll answer that with both.
Yes.
Our vision for this model started with our own planning and strategy. And okay, how can we better draw people into the building, and what do we think would be engaging? And we started that conversation around, all right, how can it be more immersive? How can we activate the building? It needs more sound. It needs more action. People need to feel comfortable in the space and not like it is just a concrete room that is silent, right? And that you can hear your voice echo across the room. How can we make this more warm and welcoming? So we started along that line. And then as we started researching, we found examples. We found other places that are doing something similar. City Museum is one of them that you already mentioned.
And what are some of the others?
Meow Wolf in Santa Fe is the other example. And there are others, but we sat down with our staff and board and said, okay, how can we take a little Meow Wolf and a little City Museum and then a lot of local Tulsa artists and make it something not unlike those things, but unique to us.
Now, are these local artists, or are they a mixture of regional and national and local artists?
They are. They're local. It was really important to us to support artists in our community. Tulsa has a tremendous art scene. We have so much talent, and we really, you know, when we talk to our artists, they're all so incredibly grateful for this opportunity because they've all, I think every single one of them at one point or another has said, this is truly a dream project. You aren't often given the opportunity to create something on this scale. So that was extremely important to us when we were conceptualizing this vision.
Now, we talked a lot about this, the experience, which will be on the second floor. You're also changing what's happening on the third floor. What's happening on the third floor?
We are. We have changed our third floor to what is now called the studio. And so when someone comes to our building, part of the experience, after they visit the gallery and the experience, they'll have the opportunity to go up to the studio and to have access to a tremendous number of art-making materials. There will be a facilitator on staff, but it will be set up essentially like a fine art maker space. We really want to give people the opportunity to come in and play. That's one of the most important components when honing and developing creativity is just giving yourself the opportunity to play for both adults and children. And I think that's something that most adults these days, you know, don't take enough time to do that. And so we really want to encourage that on the third floor. So for people who have trouble getting started, you know, if they just walk into a blank room full of materials and don't know what to do, we'll have different, our facilitators will be trained to engage with them to create projects that are completely unique to them.
Something they could walk away with?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Interesting. Now, so a lot of places will offer a studio space, and yet it will be taken up by, you know, people who are really interested in creating work. But it sounds like you're gearing this more towards somebody who just goes through the experience, say, and says, hey, I want to dabble with this. Is that what you're looking
Absolutely.
At?
Absolutely. It is meant for all ages and all skill levels. It's a warm, welcoming, safe place for people to come in and experiment with materials, experiment with ideas, and to hopefully have a really enriching experience that makes them want to continue in creative pursuits and to come back and visit us. And, you know, creativity is a process. So I see this remaining relevant. People could come in to this space and there are truly infinite possibilities.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is really the first time you've really utilized the third floor for the public, correct? Because I know when the third floor was first envisioned, it's almost like the Tulsa Artists Fellowship for what was going to happen on the first floor. You would bring in an artist, they would sort of stay on the third floor, or, you know, they would work on the third floor for a period of time. But is that correct, that this is the first time really the third floor is being utilized for the public?
It is, to an extent. I think some of what you're referring to is our fourth floor,
because
artist studios. But in another respect, yes, the third floor traditionally had our technical art studios, and you could access those by registering for a class. Mm-hmm. And we are still going to offer that at all different skill levels. So once you come and interact in the open studio space, you can then sign up for a class to take your skill further. And we will offer those classes in printmaking, fabric art, jewelry making, metalsmithing, photography, all those things we have been doing will continue.
Now, the fourth floor will still be for visiting artists that are coming and creating work on the first floor?
The fourth floor is currently used by the George Kaiser Family Foundation for their artist fellows.
Oh, okay.
And so that is consistent with our mission, and they have 24-hour access to to the fourth floor. So that will continue.
Yeah. My guests today are Holly Becker, the executive director of AHA Tulsa, which was the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa, now known as AHA Tulsa. They have shifted their name and a shift in the programming at AHA. And Amber Litwack, who's the director of education, public engagement, and national partnerships. Now, you talked a little bit how your programming in the building will change. What about the rest of the programming of what has been the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa, now AHA Tulsa? that's going to stay the same. You're still involved with Any Given Child, Harweldon Institute, Artists in the Schools. Talk a little bit about those other initiatives.
Sure. Our education programs will continue. Those are the foundation of also what we try to do in our community. So we've talked a lot about individuals and their individual ability to find their creativity. That's all part of a bigger mission, which is to keep Tulsa creative and to grow creativity in Tulsa. And that starts for most kids in the school system. So that is still a key part of our mission. Our mission actually is three-pronged. We intend to grow creativity through education, advocacy, and partnerships. Those are kind of the three legs of our stool. So education is a key piece. Artists in the Schools, Harweldon Institute. Artists in the Schools will continue to serve multiple public school districts in our community and fill those gaps.
And what does that entail for the most part?
That is a process of matching up artists who work in Tulsa with teachers in our school systems to bring arts programming into the classroom. So we reach out to artists in the community and work with them on what their discipline is, what they could provide to different children at different age levels. And then we provide that information to teachers and we match them up so that those teachers can then bring artists in and use them in their classroom.
I know Harweldon Institute also was a summer institute where you brought teachers in for training. So they could better integrate arts.
And that is going to continue and grow, actually. You know, we intend to grow the professional development opportunities we offer to teachers and to artists. It will be under the Artists in the Schools name going forward.
But. Okay. And then a big emphasis of AHA Tulsa, as I'm trying to get my head around the name now.
Good job.
Is the partnerships you've had. And I know, Amber, you've been involved with this with Any Given Child. This was I just remember when this took off, I just said, this is such an important step. And I know it's had growing pains, but it's still going very well. Tell us a little bit about Any Given Child for those people who don't know what this is.
Sure. Any Given Child is our partnership with the John F. Kennedy Center in D.C., as well as the City of Tulsa and 14 Tulsa arts organizations. We all work together under a collective impact model to make sure that every kindergarten through eighth grade student in Tulsa Public Schools has a quality sequential arts education. We do this through really in-depth curriculum that surrounds what we call our live arts experiences. So for example, every grade level has an arts partner. Every third grade student in the Tulsa Public Schools district visits Philbrook as part of their curriculum. Under Any Given Child, every second grade student has an opera experience. Every sixth grade student visits AHA. So by the time a child, begins TPS in kindergarten and exits in eighth grade, they will have visited all of our major cultural institutions and had a really in-depth, age-appropriate educational experience.
But it's not just visiting that institution. It's not just attending an opera performance, for example, maybe a student opera performance.
Correct.
There's that whole year, there's usually engagement.
Correct. We have curriculum that surrounds the live arts experiences. So each grade it's a very robust, maybe 30 pages of curriculum that's implemented throughout the school year. Additionally, we provide teacher professional development for all through K-8 teachers. And then for K-8 teachers who are really committed to arts integration, we offer a professional development institute that actually is a year-long institute that occurs on Saturdays. So teachers give up their Saturdays to come in and learn more about arts integration, and we're able to offer them a stipend for their time. But it's really making an impact in the district.
Have you been able to measure that impact? Because now what has it been going on? What, 5-6 years?
Yeah, next year will be our seventh year of implementation.
Uh-huh.
And yes, we do. We have 3 strategic goals or outcomes for students, and then we have 2 outcomes for teachers. And for students, we really want to increase student knowledge of the arts and cultural institutions in Tulsa, which, of course, our numbers are showing that we're doing a great job with that. We want to increase student academic vocabulary. Again, we have met or exceeded our goals for all of our outcomes, and we want our teachers, and we want to increase both their desire and their interest to use an arts integrated curriculum. So we've exceeded the goals that we've set every year on all of our outcomes.
Are you getting anecdotal evidence from these arts organizations that saying, you know, hey, you know, we're seeing kids bring their parents to our facilities or coming to our concerts or whatever?
Absolutely. Both from our arts organizations as well as teachers who offer feedback on how these experiences have both impacted them and their classroom practice as well as their students.
Yeah. My guests today are Holly Becker and Amber Litwack from AHA Tulsa, the new name for the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa. They're offering a shift in programming at the Hardesty Arts Center, which is everybody knows as AHA. Is that now the official name of the building, or is it still the Hardesty Arts Center?
It is the AHA Hardesty Center.
AHA Hardesty Center.
AHA for short, and that's what everybody likes to say.
So along with this shift in programming at the AHA Hardesty Center, you're going to be changing how people access the building as far as you're charging admission now, or I mean you're charging admission more.
We will in June. Yeah, we'll charge a general admission to access the whole facility, and then guests can interact in the gallery, go through the experience, make all the make and take art on the third floor in the studio for that one ticket price.
And will that be, if you're a member, will that be waived, or will it be a
that's
less?
That's correct. Yeah, yes, so members get unlimited access.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So that's a good thing. Before we end, I do want to ask about Harweldon. I know Harweldon was up for sale. That sale has now fallen through. And when we think of the old Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa, that was sort of the center of the cultural life. It was a big center for the cultural life for many, many years. What's the plans for Harweldon at this point?
Well, Harweldon is still on the market, and mm-hmm. we're working with our realtor on that process. Uh-huh. So I don't have anything else I can share with you today.
Yeah. Is a condition of the sale that the house and the grounds still be, you know, I assume there's a historic designation for the house and grounds, so you can't really change that, right?
There is a preservation easement that we are working on that will be in place to protect the home. So the home will not be able to be destroyed. No. Yeah, that's really important to our board and our staff and the community. So that will be in place for any buyer. Yes.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with AHA Tulsa and the new programming philosophy for the building. Sounds like you're pretty excited about what's going to happen.
We're really excited. Thank you, Rich.
We are.
All right. Well, congratulations on that, and we look forward to seeing the experience. When will it open to the general public?
June 30th opens to the public.
All right. Holly and Amber, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Holly Becker is the executive director and Amber Litwack, the director of education and public engagement at AHA Tulsa, formerly the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa. They're announcing a shift in programming for their AHA Hardesty Center in the Tulsa Arts District, which will open to the public June 30th. For more information about their organization, visit their website at ahatulsa.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.